Hello, welcome to The Addict's Advocate, a podcast geared towards the suffering addict and those in recovery. This podcast does not provide any medical advice. No material on this podcast is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Addict's Advocate. I'm your host, Dusty Dean, and it is my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine by the name of Brad. Brad and I have spent some time together in and out of treatment, and I know he's been working on his sobriety. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks, Dusty. Thanks for having me.
How have things been for you?
You know, things have been good, progressively better, I would say. I was just reflecting with another of my recovery friends, you know, just coming through 2023, the end of the year, everybody does the reflection, you know, the look back, what was the year? I feel like 2023 was both the worst year and the best year of my life. In many ways, but it's the year I got sober, and you know, by the grace of God, still am into 2024 here. So I'm good. It's I just hit I guess 6.5 months sober, and I've been, you know, as you know, we've talked about this, but I've been through cycles of abstinence over the last several years where I've gone months at a time without drinking, and then, you know, always right back in the middle of it. It's not something I really considered that I wanted to quit full time. I never had it in my mind that I needed to quit full time or that I needed to make it something permanent in my life until just the last year, last fall. But yeah, coming out of treatment, coming out of SVR, I guess it was 1st of September was when I came home. It was a bit of a shock on some levels. Like everything still felt normal. I felt great. I put on a little bit of weight, as I think you do when you're surrounded by that much food and all your needs met basically at every hour. But it was a little bit of a shock insofar as, you know, and we can get into it, I'm sure, in our conversation, but you know, I knew in my mind that this doesn't solve everything. I was very happy that I was sober and that I'd really developed a foundation for thinking about my life going forward in terms of sobriety. And I knew that all of the shit that was, you know, storming around me that contributed to my lingering in my addiction for so long, that shit was still storming and that wasn't gone. And so it took me some time to really get back into the current of my life and to really kind of pick up. And it was one of the hardest series of months I've had, you know, and I'm still kind of in the middle of it. I'm still looking for a job, doing some freelance work, but you know, picking up the pieces, I guess, you know, that's what it's about at that stage. And it took me a minute to pick up the pieces enough to kind of realize, like, okay, I feel hopeful. It's not just a word game I'm playing right now anymore. But I actually, I internally kind of feel a hopefulness. So that's carried into the new year here, and here we are, middle of February already. And yeah, I feel better than I ever have in memory, physically, and got some things on, you know, on tap that I'm looking forward to. So I'm doing pretty good.
That's awesome, man. You know, you'd made the mention of, you know, obviously coming home from treatment and kind of restarting a life.
Right.
For me, it was very much, I perceived that I was going to be leaving treatment and like the next chapter was just going to basically unfold. And what I come to find out was that I was in like a halfway kind of point in my life. I got home and I was like, okay, wow, this is sobriety. Now what do I do? Right. And And it took me some time to get, you know, first of all, to be patient with myself, you know, give myself some grace and to recognize that, you know, my motivations and the things that I did in the past are not the same, nor should they be, but be okay with, you know, maybe I am going to eat a little bit more because the food is tasting so delicious now, or maybe I'm going to be more self-care. You know, allow myself to relax and, you know, sit back, you know, and watch a show for a couple of hours and not feel a constant need to do something. You brought up something important that, yeah, life doesn't get easier, but at the very least, you're no longer, well, it's easier in the sense that you're not dealing anymore with that monkey on your back that constantly wants to get fed, right? To feel better in all ways, shapes, and forms. But you're now looking through life without that lens of alcohol and that lens of addiction, whatever it may be. And in some ways, you're more raw and you feel more. And you have to learn to sit in it, right? Sit in it and deal with those emotions, recognize them for what they are. And you come to discover yourself more, right? You come to truly understand who you are and the things that you're struggling with that maybe you did mask with, you know, your addiction of choice, right?
Sure.
What was the catalyst? How did you know that you obviously were in and out of sobriety personally before you went and saw treatment, but what was the driver that made you sit there and go, the way that I've been doing it in the past, my sobriety efforts hasn't lasted for a long time. What was the catalyst that made you sit there and go, I need external help?
Yeah, there were a couple of things that happened. You know, as you know, I'm closing a business after 10 years. It'll be a year ago in April. I had a couple of seizures, ended up in the hospital for a few days. That was a wake-up call. You know, you think that, you know, basically near-death experience would have sort of shaken me into a realization that I needed more than just abstinence. But it, you know, that lasted 3 months, and then I kind of went on a little, you know, I've been good. I think I can pick up again and probably control this. And that's when it was just, it became just abundantly apparent that my brain was broken and I was going to kill myself if I kept drinking. And I hit the bottom really hard, really fast, and over about 2 days, at the end of July. You know, and my wife, that's when she realized what had happened, and she told me, she was like, I either need, you know, given my recent history with seizures, you know, she said, I either need to take you to a hospital right now, or I need to take you to a rehab. And you know, I thought, like, well, there's no way I can just step out of my life, you know, such as it is, but just leave my family and my daily responsibilities. I can't just walk away from that for 30 days. Like that's a non-starter. Like it's not open for debate. I can't do that. You know, ultimately I did do that, and it was a struggle. It was a challenge for everyone, but you know, my partner's been very supportive, and I think that even she realized, especially, well, she communicated to me at the time, like, this is worth it. This is what you need. You need to concentrate on you. Take this experience. This is a gift, you know? And so that's why I approached my month, in treatment, was this is it. This has to be it. I'm, you know, one more slip and I could be dead. I just don't want to be, a drunk. I don't want to be an alcoholic, just stuck in addiction. I don't want that to be my identity. I don't want that to be the kind of person I am. You know, having been sober for 3 months before this event that led me to go to rehab, you know, that was long enough to start to see some differences in my, you know, not just how you feel. It's not just like, I don't have the shakes anymore, or I'm not you know, sweating constantly or sleeping really poorly. Like those things get better quickly. But then over the following few weeks of the summer, you know, I took my kids camping and didn't drink. It was the first time I'd been camping and not had alcohol with me probably in 30 years. And it was great. You know, they had a great summer, had a bunch of great experiences, and just realizing like, wow, you know, it's things are, you know, enormously better without alcohol in my life. My ability to think and pay attention, my ability to hold a conversation, my ability to articulate thoughts, you know, it was returning in a way that I didn't realize had been missing. So it's like you see this part of yourself reemerging that you'd forgotten existed. It, you know, you say, you kind of get to know yourself. I mean, I had forgotten parts of myself in a big way. And I started seeing that coming back over the summer. And then, you know, when I did go back to, you know, I'll try some controlled drinking, and it was just completely out of control. When I ended up going to rehab, that was the experience where I was like, looking back over the summer and how great I'd felt and how great I'd things seemed to be going, and then just what a poison and what a destructive force alcohol had become in my life, and that I'd absolutely want a complete permanent divorce from it. And, you know, that's a lot for me to say, because I've been an avid home brewer for many years, decades. I'm in the alcohol industry, as you know. I make booze, I sell booze, I work in bars. It's been my life. And for me to get to a point where I'm saying, you know, I don't want alcohol to be in my life on any level for any reason, that was really huge. It was a big step. So it's a step I'm glad I took. But, you know, it was back to your original question. It was a series of things that happened last year that kind of led me to that moment. But in reality, it was, you know, a brush with death and then also a glimpse of life that I'd had just over the previous few months. I realized, like, and getting to the point where I realized I need help. I can't do this. I can't do this on my own. I've been trying, whether I want to admit it or not, I've been trying for years, and I've been failing at it, and I'm going to keep failing at it unless I can just admit I need help. And I didn't know what help looked like. I didn't think I needed AA. I didn't think I needed rehab. I thought I needed to go somewhere where I could just sober up and dry out and take some time and not have the pressures on me for a minute, you know, like a spa day or spa week. But it didn't quite work out like that. And so the getting exposure to AA, going to meetings, building a community of friends just in sobriety, you know, that was huge, you know. So getting to a point where I know I needed help and I had all the evidence anybody could ever need that I needed to get away from it. I needed to find a new direction for my life, because it just wasn't working.
You brought up a lot of good points there. One was, you know, you didn't want it to be a part of your identity, right? And I know that this disease does just that, right? It plays games with your head. It makes you think that, you know, you need to hide this.
Right.
You know, it's not that bad.
You think you're getting away from it, right? Getting away with it, right? No, nobody knows. Right. Nobody can tell.
Right. Or at the very least, it's social. Everybody does it. So why can't I?
Totally normal. Yeah. I deserve it.
And then you referenced the fact, you know, this broken brain, right? And I think if people understood that more, that, you know, first of all, you are not your addiction. You have this disease. And it's medically right. Understood to be a disease, and there is help for you. Now, obviously, like you had said, you know, me going into the 30-day, you got to be out of your mind. I'm not going to remove myself from my normal environment. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things that deters people, and specifically people that I hope are listening to my podcast that have contemplated right. Getting help, that have
it
going,
just feels
I can't
like
do
it
this.
Will not work. That's the yeah. One thing I can't do. You know, I know I probably need it. There's no way I can do that. You know, that's where I was.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hear that a lot from a lot of others too. Those who have done it and been like, I was in the same place and I did it. And I realized looking back that I didn't really have a choice
yeah.
In order for me to get to where I am now.
Yeah, you know, and it's taking care of yourself. You know, the thing that was, it obviously catches a lot of people off guard is that 30 days may not be it when it's all said and done. Right. Obviously, it's a lifestyle change.
Nothing is fixed.
Right. And, you know, sobriety is not owned. It's rented and you know, payments due every day. Right. And that was a shocker for me. But I tell you, when I like when I talked about this whole halfway feeling I was in when I left the 30 day, mm-hmm. I was so thankful to get into an IOP. So thankful. Because it was literally like I had my group of friends again. I had my group of people that understood my struggle.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
And that's just, that's given me such a good anchor. You know, you and everybody at SVR, the IOP anchor that I have now, we have a big text thread that we do. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for that. What did you think was the biggest problem as far as mental health outside of obviously the addiction? Was there something that you felt that you were, there was a degradation of your mental well-being?
Yeah. Well, I have a dual diagnosis, like many of us, probably a triple diagnosis. I don't know. I've struggled with depression, all of my adult life, and I've tried different, you know, medications. I've gone most of that time without medications, but, you know, I take an antidepressant now and I have for a couple of years. I was diagnosed with, ADHD. I know everybody says I've got ADD. It's, you know, in reality, it's more than that. There is an actual neurological condition, that you can be tested for. And if you think that it's something that's contributing to how you feel about yourself and the world, then I encourage people to get tested because it's not what you think it is. You know, it's not an inability to pay attention. For me, it manifests as a real, an incredible resistance to task initiation. I could not get started. There was a physical pain to get started with things. And once I could go, I could get momentum, but that became worse and worse, and alcohol exacerbated that. And so my mental health deteriorated with alcohol because it made my situation a lot worse, which made my depression a lot worse, which dug me into a deeper hole just in terms of my responsibilities and the things I was supposed to be dealing with. And I was dropping the ball. You know, nobody who's deep in alcoholism, deep in their addiction, is really carrying their weight. You know, you may think you're functional or getting away with it, but I guarantee you, you know, you're struggling more than you know. And that was me. I thought I was pulling it off, but in retrospect, I was not. And I was just it was a feedback loop that just got worse and worse and worse. And in my case, my depression and my my ADHD just combined with alcoholism, it was just kind of a perfect storm. You know, I was absolutely just paralyzed in my life, and I was really depressed and down on myself, and I was drowning myself in alcohol, which is a depressant, which, you know, the hangover is the homeostatic sort of move that your brain tries to make when it's metabolizing alcohol pushes you into anxiety. So I don't know. Even casual drinkers probably know the feeling of, you know, you drink too much, wake up the next morning, you feel incredibly anxious. That was just a constant reality for me. So I was drowning my anxiety in more alcohol, which was putting me further behind on everything, which was making me more depressed. And I would respond to that by drinking more. And it was just a feedback loop that just doomed me. So, you know, to your question, how did my mental health contribute or play into this? It was all just a big perfect storm for me. Those factors all came together, and alcohol was the worst possible thing I could be doing to take care of myself and take care of my mental health. You know, it's hard enough if you're battling depression or any other sort of neural or neuroatypicality. It's hard enough just to stay centered and to know yourself. You throw alcohol on top of it, and it's just, you know, you're digging a hole fast. And, that's where I was. It was, you know, depression, really. It was just taking a depressant as a depressed person is it's suicide, literally.
Yeah. And I relate to that. I've been dealing with depression, and I recognized that basically the beginning of August of last year that I was in a major, major depressive episode, and I was stuck. And through, you know, additional psychiatry assistance, you know, I've come to realize that I'm probably dealing with some sort of spectrum of bipolar.
Mm.
And so I deal with racing. It's not,
I mean, I think it's more common than, you know, not. I think a lot of people who, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just on that exact point, I think people who battle depression, who are battling any other sort of neurological struggle, turn to substance, you know, because shit sucks. Mm-hmm. And for 30 seconds, it doesn't suck when you're drinking. Until it does.
You know, I tell you that one of the biggest blessings in treatment was the fact that I was able to play with my medications. And I tell you, I'm dialed in now. I mean, my Lexapro, I no awesome. Longer feel any depression. And I take Seroquel for my anxiety and my racing thoughts. And I tell you, I'm present. I'm easygoing. I no longer ruminate. And it's just, I tell you, it's just a big breath of fresh air. And it's exciting because I was like, hallelujah, you know, because I've gone the route before on my own, trying to seek, you know, help and try to deal with, you know, certain things, but it was never as intensive as SVR was. And I thank God for
it. And, you know, and you made the point, just having the space in your life to tinker with that. You know, if you're working a 9-to-5 and dealing with family, it's, you might hesitate to like, I'm going to start adjusting my medications. You know, the fallout from that can be pretty, pretty horrible. So yeah, it is and it's 30 days is not really long enough to go very far with that, but to have the freedom to just, you know, relax and take the pressure off yourself and to be in a supportive environment surrounded by like-minded supportive community of friends and to have the medical side of it. You know,
right.
Seeing doctors every week, you know, it was a transformational experience for me, going to SVR and a lot for what you're saying, just having that space to kind of think about myself, but also to, you know, to feel for the first time in a long time. And that included like with the medication, you know, I realized at SVR that I can't take Seroquel. But the racing thoughts, the rumination, just getting stabilized on the few medication. And I try to take as little as I need to now. And I've actually cut back on some. And actually, speaking of medication, one of the worst things that happened to me was, on some levels, was getting my ADHD diagnosis, because the psychiatrist put me on Adderall. And Adderall blew my tolerance for alcohol through the roof. I could drink as much as I wanted all of a sudden and not really be impaired or feel like I was. I just had like constant energy and I felt constantly on, even if I drank. And so I drank more and more and more and more. So from the time that I got that diagnosis and started on that medication, it really fucked with me. And getting off of that was really important, first of all, for my health, but also it was sort of tricking me into thinking I could handle the alcohol when I totally couldn't. So that's a dangerous game to play, you know, if you're messing around with medications and depression or anything else and alcohol or addiction to, you know, other drugs. It's just, you don't know what's what. You don't know what's contributing at that point, you know?
Right. How's your family responded to your efforts to get and stay clean?
They've been really good about it. You know, I have young kids and they're old enough to know. Well, two of them are. One of them, he's four. But my older children, they know what's happened. You know, they know that I'm in the business of alcohol and that I'm no longer in the business of alcohol, and they know why, and they know where I went and why. I've been very open with them. My wife and I have both been very open with them. It's not a secret. It's not a shameful thing. It's an important thing. And I think, you know, being able to just model that for them has been an important thing. I mean, they've inherited half of their genes from me. So hopefully they can see the way I'm addressing my own struggles with addiction and take some strength from that when they're making their own decisions as adults. But they've been supportive. You know, one thing it's related in the big book, the AA big book, once or twice, you know, like nobody's going to give you an award for getting sober. It's like, it's a huge thing, right? Like getting sober, staying sober, you feel like I've done this incredible thing. I've improved myself so immensely, but no one's like, congratulations, dude, you're no longer a drunk. You know, it's like you've gotten to baseline in the minds of everyone else. So it's not, in a way, it is very alone. It's a very lonely place. Because I can't go out and celebrate, hey, kids, dad hit 6 months today. You know, they're not giving out chips for that. So in that sense, I share that with my community of, you know, my recovery community, my friends in AA. But outside of that, you know, my wife is a mental health professional. So I consider myself lucky in that regard. I've got someone on my side who knows exactly what I'm dealing with clinically. So I think I have, you know, like I said, I'm lucky. I have more support than I think a lot of people would. But I also don't want to push my luck, right? I'm taking the grace of the opportunity to get help, you know, when I could, and not push it further to just keep burying myself in this addiction. So, yeah. They've been supportive. But it's also something that's, you know, in their minds is in the past and is, let's live our lives now kind of thing. So,
yeah, no, that's good. You know, you brought up something important though, Rhett, genetics and the risk for your children potentially to fall into the horrors of addiction. And I think at the very least, you have a good baseline. You've got so much experience and also empathy for what it is that
right.
you obviously are a great beacon of hope to help them should they need, you know, assistance in recovery themselves.
I did not grow up that way for one. So I also, you know, come from that environment where any alcohol was shameful. And being an alcoholic, it's one of the worst possible classes of human you could be. You know, you're scum, you're derelict. And, you know, for that reason, a lot of my family don't know about my struggles over the last year. They know I'm closing the business and that I look and sound a lot better than I did a year ago, but I haven't told the full retelling to many. You know, the people who need to know, but I didn't grow up in a supportive environment at all. And so I think, you know, I want my kids to have that. I don't want them to feel shame around it if they find themselves struggling in this way. They know that they have a supportive family to help them.
You know, we talk about, because I know personally when I was contemplating even seeking treatment and such, before I got to that place of being ready, I just envisioned nothing but, you know, drug addicts that had track marks up and down their arms, people without jobs, people without families, people that are in and out of the court system. And the reality of it is that I haven't met in concentration such a huge amount of accomplished people, and yourself included. I've met that in SVR. I meet that in my current IOP, even though I'm now just simply in an aftercare program. But I've met some truly brilliant people. And it's almost interesting in that the stresses and or the brilliance that comes with that, that there is maybe, you know, this tinge of illness in some way, shape, and form, right? That helps people cope.
Right. Well, it's I know a lot of artists, you know, creativity comes from a similar place of, you know, anxiety and depression. You know, people who are very accomplished are often driven and motivated by anxiety, low self-concept. I see a lot of that, but yeah, I had the same experience. You know, a lot of my friends in recovery are some of the smartest, funniest people, most genuine people that I've ever met. This is the most genuine community of people I've ever been a part of, easily, you know. I grew up going to church. I was a Baptist kid, you know, and it was claimed to be that kind of supportive environment, but nothing like this. It's just, there is no judgment really at all in the community of, you know, my recovery friends. And it's something I wish everybody could experience. You know, sometimes I think of AA as like, this is just good life advice. You don't need to be an addict to benefit from the principles here. You know, it's almost a shame that that's what it takes to get to be right. A part of a community like this and to practice these ideas. But yeah, I agree with you. Some of the most brilliant people I know are my associates and colleagues in recovery.
Yeah. It's interesting you brought that up, because there are a lot of people in this world that don't struggle from addiction, but yet aren't present in their lives and don't, you know, just kind of eke an existence out, where someone who's been in addiction has maybe lost those years due to addiction, but in sobriety, they're so present.
Exactly.
And I think that that's a blessing, at least, right? You can capture that time back, you know, in a sense.
Yeah. Practicing humility and gratitude and genuinely connecting with people from a place of empathy and non-judgment, and connecting with people from just different walks of life. These are just good ways of being a human. So
right.
I've found that in my recovery community. You know, like I said, I feel it's a little disappointing to realize it took that to get me into a community of people like this. But, you know, I am very grateful. I'm a grateful alcoholic in that regard.
What, in maintaining your sobriety, what sort of struggles have you been having to manage? And if you are having struggles, what has been the routine or the habits that you've been doing to try to help you?
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, just being gentle with yourself, being patient with yourself. It took me some time after SVR to really get any momentum whatsoever in toward a routine. I just didn't have the focus or wherewithal to get up in the morning and start doing stuff and stay concentrated and focused on the tasks I needed to. I was still all over the map. I still had a lot of just emotional volatility that I had to deal with and work through. You know, it's all neurological. It's just how our brains work. But sort of rewiring my brain into, you know, just a better baseline, it took a little bit. I had to go through weeks of just, man, I didn't get anything done today. And you know what? I'm going to have to be okay with that, because what I did get done was I'm sober today and I exercised and taking care of myself. I got to spend time with my kids. That's a good day, you know? So what? I didn't finish a punch list of productivity items or whatever. I'm in a different place than that now. Like, I do have a regimen that I follow. I work at home, but I keep a pretty tight schedule every day. I wasn't able to do that right away. I don't know about you or what your experience was like, but that was really hard for me to develop. And it took that level of patience. It took patience to do that. But I'd say a part of, you know, maintaining my recovery, my sobriety, tending to myself now, what that looks like is, you know, staying connected, not isolating. Isolation was one of the biggest factors that got me to the depths that I was at, got me as deep into the hole as I did. Not isolating, reaching out to people, keeping the conversation going to meetings, staying as present as I can with my family, but also having a routine. I think, you know, I need structure. I don't do well, and I can say this confidently as someone who's been a business owner and self-employed for 10 years, I do not do well without structure. And I never would have admitted that 10 years ago, but man, I definitely need it. And I, structure and accountability, you know, I think being able to adhere to those things, it's sort of a forward feedback loop now or a positive feedback loop where I maintain this schedule that's reasonable. You know, it's not unattainable. But when I can do that and live my days, get up in the morning, do the things I need to do, tend to the things I need to tend to, take care of myself, but then get the things done and focus, my ability to focus it feels so much better. My whole problem with task initiation is gone. But being able to adhere to that routine, get up and do the things I need to do, take the next right step, as they say in AA, do the next right thing, that contributes to my recovery. It builds a positive sort of sense of self-regard, reinforces doing it again, you know? So I go to meetings. I run a meeting. I have an AA meeting that I run on Sunday nights, a book study. And I do usually one other meeting. I have a sponsor doing the 12 steps. Never thought in a million years I would have been into AA, but you know, I really enjoy it. It's like legitimately nourishing on a spiritual level. And I say that as an atheist. I find it nourishing to have a regular company of people that understand and to be able to talk through these things and to explore these ideas. You know, I feel like I'm having a conversation with someone every single day about recovery on some level. I mean, it's a daily part of my life as talking about recovery and just, you know, how good it is for if nothing else, you know, like, man, this is, when I was in my addiction, I never would have thought I would have appreciated this, but this right now, you know, it's a blessing. It fills me with gratitude. So yeah, gratitude, that's another big one, right? Being able to express and itemize things you're grateful for, being able to talk about being grateful, experiencing gratitude. That's helped me maintain my momentum in recovery. You know, I know that I have a lot to lose by picking up again. And it makes me want to less when I stay in that place, you know. So keeping a routine, taking care of myself physically, spending time with my family, practicing gratitude, and not ignoring the fact that I'm in recovery and talking about it.
That's awesome, bud. A lot of gems of wisdom there. I appreciate that. You had brought something up a little bit earlier, just in regards to, like we had talked about earlier, about just trying to find this routine again, right? What does that routine look like? What does my life look like? And I think that in the addiction, there's this motor that gets going inside of our minds that, you know, and I think part of it is just simply because, you know, you are internally feeling like you're maybe shit for being an addict. And so because of that, I'm going to overcompensate by being overzealous in everything I do. I'm going to try to now accomplish more in that regard. Mm-hmm. And so this thing has been going on for so long that when we stop the thing that we felt bad about, the brain's still going, oh, but hey, you got to keep doing all this other shit, you know, keep moving. And if you don't, I'm going to make
you a shit bag. You know that, right?
And those habits are strong, right? And I think that's definitely something that, like we said, you know, there's got to be grace in that transition. I tell you, bud, this has been fruitful for me. I appreciate it. And I'm thinking that at least if one person hears this, it's going to be beneficial for them and in their path to sobriety.
Well, if that's you, great. Go ahead. No,
if
go
you,
ahead.
If you heard, if you had somebody walk up to you on the street and said, hey, you know, I'm scared, you know, and I've got a lot of obligations, and I don't even really drink that much. But of course, when I do, it's usually overindulging. Maybe, you know, praying to the porcelain God, throwing up in the middle of the night, or I feel like shit for a couple of days afterwards. But yet, within 3 to 4 days, maybe sometimes 5 if I hold out, I'm right back at it again, and I can't seem to stop, and I'm contemplating, you know, seeking help. What sort of advice would you give them?
You don't have to solve it all right now. You don't have to fix it right this minute. It's great to acknowledge that. It's awesome that you're telling someone, you know, come to a meeting with me or let's talk, or, you know, just stay sober for today. Don't drink today. And then, you know, and then let's talk about it. But I think what was overwhelming to me was feeling like I had to fix it immediately all at once. And you can't, it's not possible. I think someone who's scared, who might be coming to realize maybe they have a problem, you know, I think just reaching out to someone who can respond positively, you know, find someone who can support you in that, who understands. I think someone who's been through it, obviously, you know, like there's so much to it, being able to connect and open up to somebody who's been through it. So, find a group of people who have had similar experiences. Let's go talk. You don't even have to say anything. Let's just go listen to what they have to say. No commitment, no promises. You don't have to fix it right now, but let's just keep the conversation going. You know, I've had that happen. I've had friends reach out to me and say like, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm relapsing, or I'm really starting to think I have a problem. I got to figure out something to do. It's like, well, you know, maybe you don't need to go to rehab. Maybe a 30-day program inpatient is not what you need. You know, that's entirely possible. For me, it was what I needed. There were a lot of indicators that I can point to, but maybe not. You know, I think one thing that I felt like maybe I was scared of, you know, like I said, for one, was feeling like I had to fix it all right now. But admitting it at all felt like a defeat. Admitting that I couldn't control it felt like a defeat. And it's not. I mean, that's a huge, huge step. That is, it takes way more strength to make that admission and to face it. So that is the biggest part of it. It's just getting to the part where you can question it, you know? But find people you can trust and lean on. That's the biggest part. Don't isolate. Don't try to fix it yourself, and don't try to fix it all right now. But don't drink today.
Well said, sir. I like that. You can't fix it all at once, because that is the truth. And yes, there's this shame and feeling like you're not strong enough to fix these problems inside of you.
Why can't you just will yourself better? You know?
Right. You know, I think I'm good, bud. I think I'm good. Is there anything else that you want to share? Mic is yours.
You know, that's it. We've covered a lot of ground here. I think it's great you're doing this, Dusty. I applaud you and reaching out and making this available to others. You know, that's one of the biggest messages I came away from my time in treatment. And then, you know, every day, it's the 12th step, I think, but carry the message, you know. Reach out to people. There are people still suffering. There are people right now somewhere suffering that are, they feel like they have no choice or no options, or they feel like they're stuck, or they're in the depths of addiction and don't know what to do. You know, like it's critical to keep taking this message out and to just, you know, you yourself, your story is important. You know, I used to feel like it was a selfish thing to want to talk about myself, right? But I've had the experience so many times in meetings where I feel like, I don't want to say anything. But then I do, and I'm just myself, and I tell my story. It may not be as exciting as some people. You know, I wasn't arrested in front of my kids. I didn't crash into a mall. You know, I don't have any felonies. You know, my story is probably pretty boring on paper, but when I just talk from the heart and tell my story, I have so many people come up to me and say, like, you know what, that's where I am. I heard my story when you spoke. And I think just being willing to put yourself out there and being willing to share your experience is so crucial to being able to help people who may be struggling. You never know who's going to hear it. So I think it's great you're doing this, Dusty. I'm fully supportive, and I'm flattered you wanted me to participate. So thanks for asking. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you very much, bud. Thank you. And I appreciate you tremendously. With that, I guess all there is to do is say goodnight and everybody take care and stay sober, okay?
Right on.
Take care. Take care, bud.
Thanks, Dusty.